the future, where people may not be compatible, but your Macintosh will be. Power Macintosh is here, and the future is better than you expected.
Hello, and welcome to Locassie Fest 30 Plus Minute Album Conversation. You're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Airfront Elijah. Join me today. When not reviewing Apple Tech, you'll find him reviewing the ale selection at his local pub. Leander Caney is here.
Hey, Airfront.
Also with us, his new documentary, Fartgate, is going to blow the lid off the dart world's biggest scandal. Lewis Wallace is here.
That sounds like a fantastic book. I can't wait to get started on that.
Who's going to be writing your screenplay, do you think?
Oh, a screenplay. Yeah, movie, documentary. Yeah. That's what you said. Yeah, so it has to be me.
You got
to
get someone really talented like Aaron Sorkin for sure. You know, how much more obscure can we get with our intros than that? Like, people who listen to this show for the first time are like, what Fartgate? The hell is he even talking about?
I wonder if you even Google Fartgate if anything comes up.
Well, now you got to Google it and let us know. And I'll just summarize it real fast for people that don't remember what we were even talking about, because this is so inside joke that I feel like I actually have to explain it. And it was one of the best stories I feel like we ever told on the Cultcast. Lewis is really into darts, for those of you that don't know. And you're like, what? Darts? Like, yeah, you know, like when you go to bars and play darts. Did you know that was actually a legitimate sport? I didn't. Apparently it is. And Lewis participates in worldwide tournaments. And he was telling us about this very serious scandal that happened in the dart world. It was like a national tournament or something, right, Lewis?
Yeah.
It was like the World Dart Finale or something.
Yeah, I think it, I can't.
Something like
that? It was in November. Yeah, I can't remember exactly which one. I can't keep all these different, a Grand Slam of darts, that's what it was.
Grand Slam of darts. Thank you. Well, you know, like in most sports, you're moving all around, right? Like even in bowling, you're moving. Well, not so in darts. And so you got to focus, right, to hit that bullseye or that triple 20. Well, what do you do to throw a guy off his game when he's going in to throw the darts? What can you do to throw him off his game without everyone knowing something was done? Silent but violent. Fills the room. And now the guy can't see. His eyes are watering. He can't breathe. And he can't throw the dart, and yet no one knows. It's the perfect crime, wouldn't you say, Lewis?
Yeah. Very hard to track down. There's no physical evidence.
The evidence evaporates, and there's no way to investigate what happened. And this story was unbelievable. I couldn't believe when Lewis was telling us that anything like this was happening in the world of sports. And anyway, I think that Aaron Sorkin could really work magic with that script. They need to get, like... Woody Allen. Woody Harrelson. Woody Harrelson. They need to get Woody Harrelson as the guy who was throwing the darts, because he seems like he'd be perfect for that role.
Plus, he's got that experience with the bowling movie, whatever that was called.
Kingpin.
Yeah. Kind of a similar role, I'm guessing.
You know what? I love Kingpin. Yeah. If you've never seen that movie, it's one of Bill Murray's greatest roles that he's ever had. I think that and then his role in Scrooged are probably his two best performances, maybe even better than his role in Ghostbusters.
Wow.
Big Earn. He's one of the best characters ever written, ever put on the silver screen. Wouldn't you agree?
God, I can't even remember that. I'm going to go
he's
watch
kind
this
of a
movie.
Personal
I haven't
hero.
Watched this in a decade, but...
Okay, well,
all
you
I remember is
it.
Didn't what you said have a fake hand or something?
Yeah, he did. Yeah,
that's like the main thing I remember, a fake hand.
We don't want to give away too much, okay?
Yeah,
and I think Leander's already
it.
Asleep.
Oh, God.
So he's just over there shaking his head. He's like, how did I wind up on this terrible show?
Called him what?
His whole career just flashed in front
for
of his
years.
Eyes.
That's nothing new.
His whole career flashed in front of his eyes, and he's like, how did I end up here? I used to write books.
Yeah, and now I'm on this.
Now we're talking about Fartgate. Okay. We've got quite a show lined up for you guys this week. It's slow. Look, I'm just going to be honest with you guys. It's slow, okay? But I still think we found some good stuff. We got some very big news items, one of which is my massive successful video that I did this week, my 7 painful truths about the 2018 MacBook Pro. Now, if you haven't seen this video, I'll link to it in the show notes. And more than the video itself, I think what is interesting to me is the response that the video has gotten. I thought I was going to get roasted on this video, but I figured I needed to tell the honest truth, my honest opinions about it anyway. And the responses I've gotten have been surprising, to say the least. So we'll talk about that. And then, of course, we need to talk about Angela Ahrendts leaving Apple. Quit or can't? Leave it to our very own Lander Kinney for putting up the best clickbaity title that just makes you absolutely have to read it. Was she quit? Did she quit or was she canned? Leander's going to give us the rundown. And then we're going to talk about the saga of Gil Amelio, the CEO that saved Apple. Leander, he saved Apple.
Mm, right.
Yeah. I actually think this is a really fascinating story. Huh?
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, we'll talk about it in a bit.
Yeah, Leander doesn't agree. I'm like, hey, look, I was just reading the Cult of Mac story, okay? So if it's wrong, I'm not the guy to yell at. But I do think that he was pivotal in Apple being present today and not going out of business. Maybe you disagree, and we'll talk about that. And then Microsoft is bringing Xbox Live to Android and iOS. Now, this is an interesting story. Normally, we wouldn't talk about something like this, but if you play video games, especially if you play online multiplayer, this is a really interesting move by Microsoft. And I'm not totally sure I like this direction where video games are heading. Do you want to be playing a video game on Xbox against someone on iOS, or someone on iOS against someone on PC? You know, it's just kind of a mismatch. So we'll talk about this a little bit more. Before we jump into the first story, let me say thank you to LinkedIn for supporting this episode. You all know the right hire can make a huge impact on your business. That's why it's so important to find the right person. I mean, think about the Cultcast. You've got me. You've got Leander. You've got Lewis. Sometimes you have Buster. This organization wouldn't be the same if we didn't have a job of highly or a group of highly professional professionals entertaining you, regaling you, keeping you engaged. That's what your business needs. It needs the right hire. But where do you find these phenomenal people to hire for your business? Well, instead of posting on the job boards, post your job to a place where people go every day to make connections, grow in their career, and discover job opportunities. That's LinkedIn. Most LinkedIn members haven't recently visited the top job boards, but 9 out of 10 members are open to new opportunities. And 70% of the U.S. workforce is on LinkedIn. It's the best way to get your job opportunity in front of more of the right people, people who are qualified for your role and ready for something new. It's the best way to find the person who will help you grow your business. And that's why a new hire is made every 10 seconds using LinkedIn. Hurry to linkedin.com/cultcast and get $50 off your first job post. linkedin.com/cultcast to get $50 off your first job post. That's linkedin.com/cultcast. Terms and conditions do apply. Okay, let's start with the 7 painful truths about the 2018 MacBook Pro. Can I first say, I don't think Apple's doomed. That's not why I was making this video. And in some people think that I was portraying the 2018 MacBook Pro as a terrible machine, which is not at all what I was trying to do. I actually love my 2018 MacBook Pro. And it's one of the best computers I've ever owned, but it's not perfect. But I think what is interesting about the comment section on Cult of Mac and the comment section on the YouTube video is how many people were like, finally, someone is speaking my truth. And they would go off on all the things they hated about the new MacBook Pros. And I was just wondering, Leander, you've been in this business a long time. Is this level of animus, has it always been like this? Or is Apple really creating products that people are not liking? And is there like an uprising of people who have legitimate complaints now that Apple's not building the products that they want?
Well, you know, Apple's much bigger than it used to be, right? That's a big difference. So there's a lot more people now to complain. But people have been complaining about Apple's products forever. I mean, they've always, even when Steve Jobs was around, they complained about the iPod. The iPod was seen as the stupidest thing that Apple ever did. They were convinced for years that, you know, the iPod was, it was all kinds of wrong. It had the wrong, you know, like when it had FireWire, it had the wrong kind of connection. And then when it went to Windows, that was a huge mistake. When Apple wouldn't open up to Windows, you know, like license the software, you know, so that Microsoft could get in the game. That was seen as a massive blunder.
Hmm.
And this wasn't just like, and it was like across the board. So, you know, had a lot of professional journalists. You know, I remember this, almost everything written about Apple has been negative, always. There's still a bunch of stories now, just looking at Medium, you know, like, and looking across what people have been publishing. Apple's doomed, Apple's in trouble. You know, the loss in the iPhone sales, you know, seems to be that Apple's really like on the decline. It's over. It's the post iPhone era.
I hear all of those things actually quite a lot. Yeah, they're doomed. They are not like they used to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's because you only hear for the negative nabobs, right? The people who have something to complain about. It's like the keyboard, for example, on the new MacBook Pros. Like, I've got one of the new MacBook Pros. It's got one of those keyboards. I have absolutely no problem with it at all. I have no problem with the touch bar, and I've never actually written anything about it. So I'm this kind of silent, you know, what I think is a silent majority.
Well, it's also because you've never used it.
What? Well,
like everybody else who's actually bought a MacBook Pro. I've got nothing to complain about. It's like, well, have you used it?
I used it the other day. Actually, I've been using it more frequently. So, but, you know, what I think is that you just, you know, you hear from the people who complain about it. Like Casey Johnson, you know, she's a writer in New York. She's been doing a lot of complaining about her keyboard and has become this sort of lightning rod. And so I think... You know, and then what she says gets amplified by Gruber and Ryan Jones and all these other people in this hope, you know, iMore, all these other sort of, you know, high profile Apple watches. And it just kind of becomes, you know, like the dominant narrative that this thing's rubbish. You know, everyone hates it. And then when someone like you posts a video about it, then, you know, everyone piles on and then you hear from all these other people that hate it too. I don't know. You know, I think honestly that there's a silent majority of people who are actually really happy with all of Apple's, you know, the latest MacBook Pro, who have absolutely no problem with it whatsoever. But you're not hearing from them.
Yeah, you don't hear from them because they are not having any major problems and they're just, you know, happy. And if it bleeds, it leads, right? People want to hear about what's wrong. News. They don't want to hear about what's right.
I mean, look at Apple's numbers. I mean, you know, they've sold more. Didn't they sell more, you know, that... I can't remember, Lewis. You probably remember this better than me because didn't you listen to the latest earnings call? Haven't they sold more Macs? You know, weren't they up again?
I think everything was up last time except for iPhones. But it gets back to the news industry. I mean, you don't write a news story about something working just fine for 3 years, right? I mean, that's not a news story. I mean,
for some reasons, I'm still really happy with my MacBook Pro.
Right.
That's not going to get any clicks.
Well,
yeah.
Right, I'm using a Mac here, you know, that's from 2014, 4 years old now. You know, I replaced the hard drive, got to admit, you know, I cracked it open myself. You know, it's a bit of a, you know, most people I think would send it to a repair shop to get that done. But it's actually not that bad. You know, you can buy all the tools and it's fairly inexpensive. And this machine's going strong, you know. I mean, you know, I was talking to you last week, Irfan, about getting, you know, looking at
the iPad.
I know,
that's why I'm laughing, because last week it was a different story. You're pissed that it was broken and you're like, and I broke the screen when I was trying to take it off and now I got to replace that. I'm like, and now here you are saying, oh, it's not that bad.
Well, you know, because I was looking at the iMac Pro and even the cheapest refurbished one is nearly $4,000. And that's absolute madness. There's no way I'm going to spend that on a machine that, you know, like to replace to get a machine that's way, way out of my league, you know, that's much, much faster, much more powerful than I will ever need, you know. And then this thing's working fine. And it's going to be working fine for years, I think. You know, people don't give Apple enough praise for that. Like their products are really, you know, I think, you know, are very long lasting.
Yeah, generally speaking, I think that you're right. It is very cathartic, though, when you believe that Apple is leaving you behind or they're not making the products in the way that you would like to see them make the products, that you go into this YouTube video thread and you see all the comments and it's like a brotherhood. We're all having a therapy session and just complaining about the things that we don't like about our MacBook Pros. And
what was in the video then? What were you complaining about? The seven things?
You haven't watched
I don't even remember what the seven things were, quite honestly, but let me see if I can remember. I think three of them were keyboard related.
You can't even remember what they were.
So, well, that's why I wrote them down and made a video. So I think three of them were about the keyboard. One of them was about just the typing sensation of the keyboard. I just don't like it. It's too shallow. Lewis, you said a while ago that it feels like you're typing on glass. That's exactly what it feels like.
Yeah, it's not a good feeling.
It's just not a good feeling. It's too flat, and I wish it had some spring. Another complaint was that I was concerned that the keyboard was going to have issues eventually. I know a lot of people will say that those
you're
issues
concerned
are
one day in the future it may That's a legitimate complaint.
I do think that that is a potential. I mean, I go back to that Matthew Taylor, I forget what you call them, where people sign up and put their name
class in. Class action lawsuit?
No, it wasn't the class petition? Action law.
Petition?
It was the petition. Thank you. Major brain outage there. Yeah, the petition. And it has like 30,000 signatures. A lot of people having these keyboard issues with the 2016-2017 MacBook Pro. But I will say also, we have like a small army of genii that listen to this show. And so now I have these avenues to run these issues by them and say, hey, how serious is this problem? And kind of get more of a gauge of how often they're seeing these kinds of repairs come in. And they say, yeah, we see these repairs occasionally, but it's not like we're replacing, you know, 200 keyboards a day or anything. It's not as bad as it is portrayed to be. And then you have had your keyboard for what, 3 years now, 2 years now, and you're having no problems. So it does seem like it's only affecting certain people for whatever reason. But then you hear horror stories about people who are having the keyboard replaced again and again and again and again, and it's just not getting fixed. And you're like, what is going on? Anyway, I'm not going to go through all the reasons because you can watch them in the video. And also, I need the clicks, y'all. Go to the video, click it. And you know what? You don't even have to watch it. Just go in there, give it a thumbs up. And then you go about your day, just so YouTube is like, oh, people like this video. We should show it to more people, and that way it gets in front of Tim Cook, which is what I'm hoping it will do.
Don't forget to mash that subscribe button. I'm so
I never
sick
ask people to.
I hate when I hear people say that on YouTube. Trust me,
look, I do too, but as long as you're there, don't forget to smash that subscribe button.
Hey, tell Leander about the feature that's a bug.
Oh, the feature that's a bug. Okay, the one thing that I did mention that a lot of people didn't seem to realize was going on is on the 2018 MacBook Pro, for whatever reason, Apple has turned every button on the MacBook Pro keyboard and the touchpad into a power button. So if you touch a key, if you touch the trackpad while the computer is shut off, it will turn the computer on. And this drives me insane. Because I like to keep my computer clean. So I'll turn it off, and then as soon as you touch the keyboard, boom, it turns back on. And I'm like, no. I don't want you to be on.
Stay down.
I just turned you off. And by the way, you have a power button. I know where the power button is, and I didn't press it. I just pressed the keyboard. And so this only affects the 2018 MacBook Pro. This is not something that happens on the 2016 or the 2017, and there is absolutely no way to turn it off. You can't turn it off. There's this way of turning off the auto start on the 2016-2017 by entering a command in terminal. But that command doesn't work on this particular feature, quote-unquote feature, on the 2018 MacBook Pro. And so I had somebody who works at the Apple Store, and they were pinging me, and they're like, actually, this is something that is useful for people who buy a Mac and they just don't know how to turn their Mac on. They don't even know how to turn it on. And I'm like, this is the problem. Apple is building these, like the Touch Bar, they're building these features into the computer to help people who don't know how to use their computer. And so maybe the Touch Bar, maybe having your every single key on your MacBook Pro be a power button, it helps someone who is a newbie. But for someone who's not a newbie, it's like, this is just annoying. I don't want the five key and the F key and the space bar to be a power button. I want the power button to be a power button. And I want you to sell me a MacBook Pro without the touch bar because I really just don't like it. And I don't want to spend money on it because it raised the price of the MacBook Pro like $300 when they introduced it. And so you're paying for all this technology that you're not using. And so if you want to use it, great. I wish Apple would give you the option like SSD space, right? Do you want the touch bar? Great, it's $300, but they don't. They force you to buy it, and I'm not using it, and I keep trying to use it, and it's not useful, and yet I'm forced to pay for it. So that's the part about it that I find to be annoying, is I just don't find it to be useful. Did I cover it to your satisfaction, Lewis?
Oh my God, what a rant, yeah.
I thought that was interesting. I hadn't heard about this. Apparently, that's that way on the MacBook Airs, the new MacBook Airs, too.
You mean how the entire computer turns on when you touch the keyboard?
Yeah.
Yeah, it must be a new quote-unquote feature.
Yeah, at least that's what it said in that support document. I've never used one, but...
Oh, you read the support document? Yeah, okay. I just wish they would give us an option to turn it off. That would be all I would ask for.
Yeah.
And so that's what I said in my video. I'm like, Craig, Hair Force, firmware fix. Just give me a firmware fix, baby. let me turn it off, and then we don't have a problem anymore.
It's funny you can't turn it off. That is a problem.
Yeah, it's a problem, especially when you're trying to clean your keyboard. And someone was telling me, they work at the Apple store. He's like, every day we have to go through all of the MacBook Pros, or all the MacBook Pros and the MacBook Airs, and we have to clean them. And so you're sitting there wiping them, and you're trying to like restart and then wipe them down as fast as possible because you're trying to wipe them down before the computer restarts, right? Because once it's off, as soon as you touch the keys, it comes back on. So like even they're dealing with this at the Apple store. They have to like super clean real fast to get it as clean as possible before the computer turns on, and then you start pressing all the keys, and it gets mad at you when you do that, you know?
Yeah, right.
And I feel guilty, like I'm making it angry. Okay, we talked about this way too long. Let's talk about Angela Arendt for a shorter amount of time so we don't completely bore everyone that's listening. Will she quit? Will she can? Will she kick to the curb? In my mind, I see her and TC, and they're just screaming at each other in the halls of Infinity Loop. It's like a scene where a teenager is angry at their parent, and they're just screaming at the top of their lungs at each other. And then he booted her out, y'all. He had security escort her out. And he's like, I'm never gonna call you and go to lunch with you again, Angela. And she's like, I hate you, Tim. And that was the end of it.
I think that's exactly how it went down. My God, you're like Aaron Sorkin. You were just right there.
I should be writing Hollywood scripts.
That was like
a
scene, yeah, from the movie about Tim Cook's life.
What do you think? Was she quit? Did she quit? Or was she canned, Leander?
Well, you know, I think the consensus was that she was canned because, you know, it was so unexpected. You know, it came out of the blue, no sign at all that she was in trouble, you know, and then what else can it mean? You know, when someone says they're going to be leaving, you know, usually when Apple puts out an announcement like that, you know, people go, oh, you know, read the tea leaves. It's, you know, she's been canned.
Let me stop you for just a sec and say Angela Arendt is or was the senior vice president of retail, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, so actually, we should
in charge of the Apple stores and the Apple, the new Apple store experiences that are being built everywhere, like that Grove concept where the Apple store is supposed to be the center of your community. Everyone's going to go down there and hang out and then learn things at the classes. And you know,
you sound a little skeptical.
That totally bizarre concept that I was like, you don't have. You're literally talking about Starbucks right now. Like, does Apple want to be Starbucks?
Town Squares. Yeah.
I
don't know. I don't think. Sorry,
I was going to say she came there from where, Leander? I just want to hear you say it.
London?
No.
Burberry?
There you go. Say it again.
Burberry.
I'd love to hear that.
Oh, really? Well, how do you say it?
I don't say it because I have no idea what it is.
Burberry?
Burberry.
I love Burberry.
It's a British fashion brand. Yeah. They started off making raincoats and then branched out into all sorts of stuff, and it was sort of like a leading brand.
Yeah, and she came there, and she made how much money?
It's about 25 million a year.
Yeah, wasn't it like 120 million total in her?
Well, more than 170, I saw some people added it up to. Yeah.
For four years of work, right? Five years.
Five.
Oh my gosh. Okay, sorry. So I didn't mean to pull you out, but I think the context is important. So people are like wondering why we're even talking about this.
Well, she was one of the highest paid executives at Apple and one of the highest paid women in corporate America. And of course, she was one of the highest profile, you know, female executives in Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, brought some much needed sort of, you know, female representation and diversity to not just to Apple, but to Silicon Valley as well, which is definitely, you know, sort of like a men's club. But I thought she was pretty successful, you know, much more so than her predecessor, John Browett, another Brit who came from Dixon's. You know, and he was only in the job about 6 months before Tim Cook fired him. And he did a bunch of disastrous stuff. You know, he was trying to reduce sales quotas and he tried to reduce staff and he wanted to get the numbers up and, you know, cut costs. And he was sort of treating it like Best Buy, you know, which is what sort of Dixon's was in the UK, like a UK version of Best Buy. Angela had the sort of opposite approach, which is like the more high touch, you know. She wants to help people and create, you know, like make people feel and make it very low key and, you know, no sales pressure, introduce people to technology they might be afraid of, you know. And I think, you know, they've been really successful. When was the last time you went to an Apple store and you could even move in there? You know, that it's always like shoulder to shoulder, complete circus, a zoo. Often there's people waiting up outside. They're hugely successful, you know, in an era when malls are closing like crazy. Like, I saw some numbers. They think like a quarter of American malls are going to be closed by 2022.
They're closing the mall right up the road from my house. It was, I think, one of America's first indoor malls. They're demolishing 3/4 of it and building condos.
Yeah, right. And it's, this is happening across the nation, you know. I mean, like, for a bunch of different reasons, not just Amazon and online shopping, but, you know, that has a lot to do with it, I think. But, you know, Apple stores are, you know, they're a real bright spot. I mean, they are by far. I saw some number somewhere that she'd increased sales per square foot by 25% in her during her tenure. And I think that has something to do with, you know, like Apple's. I mean, obviously, it has a lot to do with the ongoing popularity of, you know, Apple's latest products. But, you know, not just the stores. But the stores, I mean, they are really super successful. And I think, oh, you know, the events that she was introducing. You know, I mean, that's not easy to do, I think, on a global scale. And, you know, this is sort of going back to what they used to do at the Apple stores. And I think what a lot of the retailers are also looking at, too. How do you get people to the stores? You know, you don't just want to get them in there to buy something. You want, you know, to go learn, to, you know, to you know, experience something, to see how someone else does something, you know, like hear a band or learn from a photographer or from an editor or from a, you know, somebody who knows what they're doing with the machine. I think from the looks of it, it's been really, really successful.
I haven't actually gone to any of the classes, so I don't want to. I mean, it's hard to make a judgment about it before you actually experience one of the classes. I kind of wonder how advanced the classes are, because my idea of it has always been that the classes are really easy and are for people who are just beginners. Like, here's how you open up Pages. Here's how you type your first paragraph. And that's not really what I'm interested in. And I would love to see an advanced course. If you bring someone in who edits, you know, documentaries in Final Cut Pro 10 and they show you how they use that software, that would actually be amazing. I would eat that up.
Right.
But they need to add a coffee bar or something. I mean, if you want it to be a place where people hang out, then you need to add some type of area for people to lounge and just hang out and really not do anything. And that's kind of what Starbucks does.
I don't know why. Well, they kind of do have that at the big main... the flagship store here in San Francisco. You know, they have an outdoor seating area.
Yeah, they have that here in Seattle too.
Kind of full of homeless people, but
needles. It's like, this is the nicest place in the whole city to shoot up.
I seen it. Yeah, people take photos out there. They have like a love sign that people take photographs in. But I don't think they have any. They don't seem to have any problem attracting people. You know, coffee or no, right? Or couches or chairs to hang out. You know, they have no problem attracting people, from what I can tell. I mean, even the one down the mall here, you know, like Stonestown, which is like, it's definitely not a tourist place. You know, this is for locals. I mean, that one is completely packed all the time too. Anyway, so you know, to get back to the point, like, was Angela fired or not? You know, so I started thinking about it and got into a Twitter sort of a conversation with this guy Ryan Jones, who's an app developer in Texas, and he has a popular Apple-centric Twitter feed. You know, he's always commenting on Apple. And he's like, you know, she was canned. And he's like, and as evidence, he cited like the Tim Cook's kind of what he thought was like, you know, his quote in the press releases. He thought it was like, you know, damning her with faint praise. He said that she left 4 months before her stock vested. And I tried, you know, for a while to look into this, and I couldn't find where he got that from. And I actually asked him, but didn't get a reply. So I don't know where he got that. I'm not sure if that is the case. Like, from what I understand, the stock for the executives vests in April, and she's hanging on till April, right? So, I wasn't really sure about that, but that was one of the things that he cited as evidence that she was gone. And then he was saying, you know, like, the stores are a mess; it's difficult to shop there. You know, she hasn't been very successful; she's been kind of checked out. Blah blah blah. So I started thinking about it, and I'm like, you know, well, the thing to me that I thought was the most telling thing is usually when they fire some high profile executive, they put him on gardening leave. You know, they tie him up. You know, like Tony Fadell and Scott Forstall. Tony Fadell was like, you know, the one who developed helped develop the first iPod and led the iPod division for a few years under Steve Jobs. When he got canned, he was signed on as a advisor to the CEO, special advisor to the CEO. So he was tied up for a year. And I think, you know, they hold onto their stock and they won't release their stock, or they give them some stock that won't be released. You know, it's like a golden pair of handcuffs. It stops them going to Google, you know, and helping develop Android. And the same thing with Scott Forstall, the guy who was in charge of the first version of iOS. You know, he had the same thing. He was tied up. You know, true, it's not true in every case. John Barrett wasn't given a pair of golden handcuffs, but like in most of the cases I can think of, you know, like when they fire someone, they tie them up, you know, there's someone going to the competition. So I don't know. I was thinking, you know, would they do that with Angela? You know, I would have thought so. You know, if they'd fired her and they didn't want her to go to the competition, they would have tied her up too. And that would have been the most telling thing that she got fired. The most telling thing, I think, though, to say that she wasn't fired was just that Tim Cook tweeted out, you know, some nice words about her, saying that it was bittersweet and he was sorry to see her go, which I don't think he would have done if he'd canned her. And also that, you know, in this interview she gave to Vogue Business, like which was published like last week, she said to the reporter, which actually wasn't in the piece, but the reporter put onto Instagram, was that, you know, she missed London. Her grown-up kids both live there. She's got a son and a daughter. Her daughter works in London. Her son lives in London. He's like a musician. He's just playing gigs all the time. And that she's been shuttling back and forth. And the way she's, you know, this quote made it sound that she was very wistful, you know, that she was really thinking about moving back there, because she'd lived there for so long and her life really was there, not on the West Coast in California. So it was like, I don't know, you know, like on the balance, I think that she quit as for the stated reasons, you know, that she was for personal reasons. She wanted to move back to London.
I'll include a link to this piece to Cultamax so people can read it. When you first started off in the piece, I was like, okay, she was definitely fired. And then by the time I got to the end, I was like, oh, well, maybe not. And the last reason especially, I mean, can you imagine if you have $170 million, you've been out of the country where you've been living for a long time, your kids are still living back in that country, you know, why not just quit and go be with your kids? That's probably what I would do too. I mean, can you imagine being in a different country and you don't get to see your kids, or your grandkids or anything, and you've got $170 million, at a certain point you have enough money, right?
Yeah.
And like, what's the point in just continuing on to build a business when you could be with your kids and watch them grow up? Which I guess it depends on what your ambitions are, what you value and stuff. But I'd probably peace out too. You give me $170 million, you'll never hear from me again. I'm going to look like Tom Cruise from Castaway. I'm going to grow a giant beard. I'm going to get real tan. I'm going to wear like a loincloth. I won't even bother dressing in full clothes. And I'm just going to wander around some island with right. my family.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, like, you know, she's definitely set for life, for sure. I mean, her husband, I was reading about her husband, you know, it was her childhood sweetheart. She's actually from Indiana. What was it called? Lewis? New Palestine.
Yeah.
And it's like a suburb of Indianapolis. But she's, you know, she's lived in London for a long, long time. And her husband, who is also from New Palestine, I mean, they were high school sweethearts. He hasn't worked, you know, he was a stay-at-home dad.
Wow.
For years while she was running Burberry and then also at Apple. And apparently he's been living in London too. So, you know, it's been difficult, I think, for that family.
Oh, yeah. So she's been out here by herself for 5 years?
Well, shuttling back and forth. And it looks like it looks like she spent a lot of time traveling. I mean, if you look at her Instagram feed, it's like, you know, here I am, you know, opening up a new store in Sydney, Australia. Hmm. And then, you know, then she's at some conference in you know, Japan, and then she's back on the West Coast, and, you know, so it looks like she was traveling all over all the time.
Let me say this about the new Apple stores. One good thing, well, depending on how you look at it, and one thing that really annoys me, first of all, we have a flagship store here in Seattle. Oh, baby. It's one of the most beautiful spaces that I have ever been inside. I mean, that's nothing to do with stores. I mean, I'm talking spaces, period. It's like the Louvre. It puts you in such a state of euphoria that it's actually dangerous. I think that that's actually the genius of the new Apple stores, is they're so beautiful and ethereal. You don't even care that you're spending thousands and thousands of dollars. Like, someone could just reach into your pocket and be like, I'm just going to take this. And you'd be like, okay, man, that's cool.
What a load of codswallop. I've never heard such rubbish in my life.
I'm dead serious. You should come to the Apple store and you'll walk in with that Mac, the iMac Pro that you're like, I don't need it, I don't want it. You're going to walk out with two and you'll be happy. You'll be like you were just shot by Cupid's arrow and you'll be looking at those things all lovey-dovey.
I've definitely had that lust factor, but I don't know if it's been induced by the stores. I find the stores a little bit sterile, to be honest.
The Grove stores?
Well, you know, like all of them. They're so uniform. You know, they're all exactly the same, more or less, you know.
Well, I think that's the difference. I mean, the previous Apple stores, I would agree with you. But the new Apple stores, though they have the same aesthetic, the same through line, they are all unique in some way. And it's like being in the Louvre. It's like being in a museum full of beautiful artwork. It's just, it's not the same experience at all. The thing, though, they removed the Genius Bar, and getting an Apple store appointment is impossible now. When you have something that you need to fix, like I was trying to schedule an appointment in my local Apple store and they were booked out a week and a half. And yeah, I was like, this is crazy. Before
I can make
an appointment and go the same day. And now you guys are booked out a week and a half. This is insane.
You know, you book the appointment and then as long as you show up on the right time, you know, someone comes over and you'll get seen within minutes. You don't have to hang around.
That's also not true. Now, when you go there, even with an appointment, you'll be waiting for a half hour, an hour before someone is able to help you. It's not the same experience at the new Grove stores. I don't know what's different. I don't know what they changed, but the service level has dropped dramatically in my experience. It's very difficult to get an appointment. And even when you get there, like previously you'd be waiting 5-10 minutes. And now I routinely hear people who are like, I had to wait there a half an hour. I had to wait there an hour, even though I had an appointment. I'm like, are you serious? You went in with an appointment and they still made you wait an hour? Like, who is this? The urologist? This is crazy. Now there's a copay. You go in there and they're like, oh, you want to get your Mac repaired? That will be $100 copay. I'm also going to have to check your prostate. It's like, what's going on in this place?
Well, you know, someone was telling me the other day they managed to get an appointment like there, and then on the day, you know, like they went in, they begged, they pleaded, you know, something opened up and they got seen and it was fixed in like 15 minutes and it was great.
Well, I think so, they reserve a certain amount of spots for emergency cases. So if you go in and you beg, they can surprise and delight you. But if you have a non-emergency, why do I feel like I'm making a hospital analogy again? If you have a non-medical emergency, if your Mac merely is sick, but it's not dying, then they'll make you wait like a week and a half, you know? But, anyway, look, we went on about this too long, didn't we? We still have to talk about the saga of Gil Emilio. I think I'm gonna have to cut the Microsoft Xbox Live story. Let's be honest, no one cares. Everyone's gonna be bored by that story anyway. So we'll wrap up with this Gil Emilio story.
I think that was probably more relevant than the
Gil Emilio story.
The Gil Emilio one.
Yeah, I think you might be right, especially considering how much Angela Ahrendts was responsible for changing the Apple retail experience and how that. I mean, that is Apple's face. I mean, that's what you interact with when you need to talk with Apple, right? Is the retail store? So she made a big impact.
Let's rush through the Emilio one real quick.
You don't want to spend an hour on it?
Sorry.
Uh-oh.
Even S-I-R-I was like, sorry, I think that you need to spend at least 25 minutes talking about this. Okay, look, before we do, I want to tell you guys about Burrow. This episode is brought to you by Burrow. Burrow is reinventing the furniture space from shopping to shipping to living to moving. They believe high-quality furniture should be more accessible. That's why you can easily customize your own sofa online and have it shipped fast and free within the same week. Burrow sofas are scratch and stain resistant, good for Leander's lifestyle. So you can live your life worry-free.
Hilarious.
They're easy to set up and disassemble, and you can make it bigger at any time. It's built to grow with you. Burrow lets you customize every detail of your sofa, pick the armrest, height, the color, and more. They even offer unique pillow collections to complement your sofa. They're made with soft, hand-woven fabric and plush inserts. They even come with a built-in USB charger. So you never have to get up from your cozy Burrow. You can just have your iPad, your iPhone charging right there on your couch. How often have you been on the couch and you want to browse with your iPhone mindlessly while you're watching TV, but your iPhone is dead, and so you have to go plug it in, and then you're left with just your TV? That's so 1990s. No one wants to just watch TV. Check this out. So when Burrow contacted me and were asking if they could advertise on the show, I was checking out their website, and I was honestly surprised by what I saw. They make really cool, beautiful, understated, minimal, mid-century inspired sofas, and you can customize them all completely. And they're doing this remove the middleman model so they can ship a sofa directly to you. And I was thinking to myself, okay, these things have got to be like handmade in India or China or something. No, they're made in North Carolina, I believe. They're made in the USA. I bought a couch 2 or 3 years ago from this really well-known retailer, and it was $2,300 for this couch, okay? Now it's a beautiful couch. And when I got it, it still had the tag on it from the manufacturer who made it, and I could see that it was made in North Carolina. And I was like, this is unreal. So this retailer basically just has a construction agreement with this couch manufacturer that's in the U.S., and they're probably doubling the price and mailing me the couch. and I could have just gone to this manufacturer directly and had it made. Now, I'm not saying that this manufacturer is the same as where Burrow has their couches made. All I'm saying is they're made in the same state. They're both high quality. They're both made in America, except Burrow couches are significantly, significantly less expensive than one of these high-end retail places because they cut out the middleman. They let you customize your couch. They ship it to you. Burrow recently got named one of Time's best inventions, so you know you're going to be amazed. You could save $75 by visiting burrow.com/cultcast. That's burrow.com/cultcast to get $75 off your order. Thanks again to Burrow for supporting this episode. Okay. Leander, the saga of Gil Amelio, the CEO that single-handedly saved Apple. Let me set up the pins here, and then you can take your bowling ball of truth and knock them all down, okay? Gil Amelio was Apple's CEO for 500 days, about. And in that time, he rescued Apple from the brink of destruction. Now, for those of you that listen to the show regularly, you'll remember that a while back we were telling you about Apple's Mac clone strategy and how they were basically letting people license their OS and then create their own version of the Mac, and it was disastrous for Apple and almost put them out of business. Well, that strategy was put into effect under the current CEO, before Gil Amelio, CEO Michael Spindler. And he also had this plan to merge Apple with Sun Microsystems. That also failed. So it's February 2nd, 1996, and that's the reason that we're talking about this. It's this week in Apple history. Apple needs a miracle. In the last 4 years, they've bled over $230 million. Their Mac clone strategy has failed. Their merger with Sun Microsystems has failed, and they go to the miracle maker himself, resurrection artist. Resurrection artist. I wrote that. Gil Amelio, without whose leadership, Apple would probably not exist today. And I say that because he churned Apple around, made them profitable, and then he ushered in the return of Steve Jobs by buying Next, who was creating operating systems that Apple would then go on to use and lead to their next renaissance in computing. And without him, I think Apple would be gone today. They wouldn't even be around. Leander, get out your bowling ball, Big Earn. Get ready to knock down those pins. What facts did you not like of this amazing story I just told?
Well, he had this reputation as a turnaround artist. He came from National Semiconductor, I think, and he'd done like a lot of hacking and chopping there and turned them into made them profitable. But he had this kind of B2B kind of mindset, right? He wasn't sort of a consumer, he wasn't the kind of CEO that should be running a consumer-oriented company. And he was kind of like, he did a lot of stuff that he was sort of mainly, it seemed like he was mainly concerned with enriching himself whilst he was CEO.
Well, wait a second, a CEO? That's obsessed with enriching himself? I don't believe you.
Well, it was in stark contrast, you know, like to the way that Steve Jobs, you know, when he brought Steve Jobs back. I mean, his first day of work, he said he was driving around and all the car parks were full and he couldn't find anywhere to park. And he was so outraged that he wanted to have special designated executive parking. Then he set about like setting up like these special executive offices that were palatial. It had its own ensuite bathroom and a lounge area and this giant office. You know, he thought it was like, he spent millions and millions of dollars on this. He got the company to lend him a lot of money. He bought this like mansion up on the lakefront in Tahoe, Lake Tahoe. He increased his compensation was like outrageous. You know,
he made a lot of money. What's not to like?
Well, and then Jobs comes, and then you know, like, and then he had this listening tour, right? So he spent the first sort of 3 months just going around, you know, sort of like listening to what people were doing and not doing very much. Jobs comes in, you know, when Jobs comes in, he takes $1 salary. He takes the smallest office, you know, like it's almost a cupboard up on the executive floor. You know, it's completely undecorated, and he gets to work. You know, Jobs spends like 18 hours a day. He also did a listening tour, but he started cutting like crazy, you know, like, and he pared back all the products and they just went with four products, a famous quadrant, you know. He was much more effective. Like, you know, Amelio was ineffective, I think, at the most, that's the most generous thing to say. Like, he really wasn't that effective. In fact, the one who really did save Apple was his CFO, Fred Anderson, who was the interim CEO after they fired Amelio. He was the one who did most of the cutting of the company and really, like, you know, scaled it back. And then Jobs came in and he kind of finished the job. And Jobs was much more courageous. Like with Anderson, I think did a lot of personnel headcount cutting, but Jobs was the one who sort of cut back the product line, you know, and really started to like really pare back the products. But so I don't know. Yeah, Amito, I think was ineffective. Yeah, but there's a lot to be said though for the fact that he brought Jobs back. I mean,
if he hadn't have done that one, if that was the only thing that he'd done, yes, he spent millions on his office. He had a harem, but if he didn't bring Jobs back, don't you think Apple might be gone? I think would be gone.
Definitely. I think that's very true. I think there's a really good argument to be made that, you know, that Apple wouldn't be around if Jobs hadn't come back.
And why did he want to buy Next? Like what was the logic there?
They've been looking for a next generation operating system, and they've been trying to develop in house. Like they were running on the Mac OS that Jobs developed 12 years before. And you know, like the system, you know, system 1 through system 7, right? Mm-hmm. And they try to get this next generation operating system called Copeland. And they've been working on it for like 4 or 5 years internally, and they just couldn't get it to work. It was a giant disaster. It was like a massive, massive project that just kept ballooning up bigger and bigger. And so Apple wasn't able to develop its own robust operating system. And by that time, the Mac OS was horrible, right? It had so much, it had been, you know, added to so much that it was really unstable. It was constantly crashing. Don't you remember those days, you know, when you booted up a Mac and had all the system extensions would load up at the bottom of the screen? And, you know, you could easily get 20 or 30 systems extensions. And it would take like five or 10 minutes for the thing to boot up. And if any of these extensions had a conflict with another one, the whole thing would freeze.
Oh, my God.
And it would freeze on boot. You know, it was awful. It was like, it wasn't a modern operating system. So they wanted something. They were looking around. They were looking at BOS, which was being developed by Jean-Louis Gasset, who used to be their head of the Mac hardware division. Mm-hmm. And he, I can't remember, he either got quit or he quit fired. He'd gone off and he'd raised a bunch of venture capital money, and he was making his own operating system that was a lot more robust, and that was like the main contender. But I think they were also looking at they were talking to Sun as well, and there was like takeover talks with Sun, and they were going to base a new operating system on Unix, which actually is what happened with Next, because you know like Jobs had developed Next, which is based upon BSD, which is a flavor of Unix at the time. But he had a really nice operating system, and Jobs, you know, like his Next company had been struggling with its business model. They would try to sell, you know, like these high-end boxes that were just like Apple. They were sort of, you know, it was a vertical stack. You know, you would get it ran its own special software, Next hardware. But you know, no one was really going for it. They only sold a few machines to like you know, the CIA and some universities and sort of power users. But it wasn't a mainstream machine at all. But they had made this beautiful operating system under R.V. Tavanian. So it's actually great, you know. And then Jobs took over pretty quick. He brought all his executives in: John Rubenstein, R.V. Tavanian, Mitch, what's his face, who was a salesperson. He took over, but he had a really great team. And it was funny, you know, because they'd failed at Next, but then they were really successful at Apple.
Man, it's such an incredible story, isn't it? I mean, they kick Steve Jobs out, and then he develops the OS that they need. So they bring him back, and that OS saves Apple. And then Steve, you know, again comes in and rolls up his sleeves and builds an absolutely unbelievable company for the second time. Yeah. It's like he did it again.
Oh yeah, it's great. It's you know, it's like it's unparalleled in the history of, you know, like of business. I don't think there's any been a turnaround ever like it. And so full of drama and so full of you know, all of these great points, like you said.
Absolutely. All right. Well, so I think when you break it all down, technically, I was right. Gil Amelio, he did it.
I've been trying to get an interview with him. He lives down in Southern California. He's like a...
Oh, he's still kicking, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, man, we got to get him on the show. Let's see if we can butter him up and be like, we think you're the greatest Apple CEO that ever lived. Can you come on the Cultcast and tell us about your time there?
I think there's, you know, like it would be interesting to talk to him, because I talked to John Sculley years ago, you know, and Sculley was hated because he was a guy that sort of caused Apple to quit. Steve Jobs to quit, you know, because he kind of got quit fired, and he was a villain for a long time, and everyone hated John Sculley, and he was like considered the worst CEO. I think it's actually until Amito came along, and then Amito took the mantle. So, but I interviewed Sculley, you know, like about 10 years ago about Steve Jobs, and you know, he was really out in the wilderness, and then Business Week picked it up and they reprinted the article and it got widely cited everywhere. And, you know, he was so generous about Jobs, and he was in his praise. And he was so, and it was so clear-headed, you know, it's like, you know, it kind of led to a real reassessment of him. So, and I think Emilio, you know, I think people have been really harsh about Emilio, like I just was. And
I tried to talk him up as the hero that Apple needed. Maybe not the hero that they wanted. And then you came in, you're like, oh, he's the worst CEO they ever had. He was worse than Scully.
He has that reputation. That's his reputation. That's how he's like, you know, how he's been judged.
It's interesting, isn't it, how some people have a reputation and then you get to talk with them and you realize they're nothing like how they've been portrayed in the stories that you've read.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know what? We should go ahead and wrap it up there because I'm going to be selling something to someone on Craigslist here pretty soon, and they keep texting me and asking me when we're meeting. So let's go ahead. That's a true story, by the way.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. They keep texting me.
What are you selling?
Like, when can we meet? I'm selling them a camera, and I got to go meet them at a local 7-Eleven. And I'm going to be strapped, and I'm going to have mace and probably a couple of grenades with me. So I'm coming away with the money. And I'm not getting robbed this time. Let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the cult cast we have for you guys this week. Hey, if you want to come say hi or talk to us about any stories we mentioned on today's show, we're all on Twitter. I'm at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. Leander is at L. Caney. Lewis is at Lewis Wallace. This has been the cult cast, the best 30-plus minute album conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the cult cast come out every Thursday night. So I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. How'd you like that radio sign off?
That was really good.
I've been practicing.
Very creative.
I do it in the shower. Next time. I just do that when I'm in the shower.
It worked.
It worked.
What a strategy.
Hey, y'all.
Oh, hold on. Got the sound coming out the wrong way.
Oh, good night.
1 second. Okay.
Hello? You missed one of the best hey y'alls I've done in months.
Oh, well, too bad.
You would have thought it was Tim Cook.
That'd be Tim. What are you doing there?
How did we get Tim on the show?